Hello and welcome. You're listening to Queer Quirks on UMFM 101.5, which broadcasts from the University of Manitoba, located on Treaty 1 territory, the lands of the Anishinaabe, Nehiyawak, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and the homeland of the Métis Nation. Now let's take a moment here to acknowledge that land acknowledgements do nothing to return that land to its rightful owners or to pursue justice on the basis of the past history of exploitation and degradation of Indigenous peoples within Canada. So if you haven't already and you can afford to, I strongly suggest that you make a recurring contribution to an Indigenous organization to make a concrete financial action towards pursuing the justice that should be our goal instead of acknowledgement. This is Queer Quirks, a queer talk and music show which examines news, history, culture, and current events through a queer lens. I'm your host, Lee Fraser, they, them, and I'm a PhD candidate in sociology at the University of Manitoba. But more importantly for the show, I have a long history of queerness and of advocacy and volunteerism in the queer community. The goals of the show are to showcase artists and creators who are part of minoritized genders and or sexualities, often referred to with initialisms like 2SLGBTQIA+. And I also discuss how events around the world affect queer communities because of how the world treats people who are minoritized genders and sexualities. Often this topic includes mistreatment and violence. I do my best to provide trigger warnings, and please let me know at queerquirks@gmail.com if you feel there's anything I'm missing. I also try to be balanced in my discussion of different groups, particularly if I'm not a member of that group. So wherever possible, I will direct you to further resources and readings or highlight people who are doing work from that perspective that I cannot provide with nuance and genuine understanding. I try to keep the show accessible, which means I rely on publicly accessible work where I can, and where I can't or where I want to highlight something that is not publicly accessible, I will work to provide interpretations and discussion to make it useful to people who have not pursued the particular career that I have. This last is very important because if you are someone who is, for example, bisexual, lesbian, trans, non-binary, if you are anyone who is a part of the groups that I talk about on this show, I believe that you're entitled to work that talks about your life experiences, and you're entitled to it in a form that's useful to you. So, if there is anything that I'm missing or anything that you want to comment on, I strongly encourage you to get in touch because I am always happy to hear about ways that I can understand the world better or work to make the show and what I do more useful and in some cases more entertaining.
So today I want to maybe close out a little bit of a conversation about pronouns and things like that. I do want to play a lot of music today because I've been listening to Hikaru Utada, and that they are a really wonderful, interesting Japanese pop artist, and I think this is a good reminder for me as well that like a lot of my music is sort of selected by North American friends and what people in radio stations and things like that choose to play. And so Hikaru Utada is somebody who has been incredibly famous and prolific, and person that I've been listening to recently after I had encountered some articles about them coming out as non-binary. So it's really exciting to me. As far as I know, they came out maybe a year ago. Most of the articles come from around that time. And so that's something that I think is really cool. And they've also talked about how they like mix as a form of address. And they had suggested MYS as like mystery as a prefix. And that's something that's really cool. And so I want to talk a little bit about them and what I've liked about the things that they've said about their gender and things so far. I do want to say that anytime I talk about someone, I like to know that they have specifically spoken on their gender, and I don't like to label people unless they have. So I will say that specifically, they came out as non-binary on a live stream and specifically labeled themselves that way. And then also on Instagram, you can find them, and it's Kuma, and so KUMA underscore power, and their pronouns up there are she, they. So that's what I'll be using for them. Now, it's something I've talked about, I think, before, that when someone uses multiple pronouns, that often people will default to the binary gendered pronoun, which is too bad because I think people are over invested in binary identities, or they think that the pronoun that they're less accustomed to is just like an optional one. So you can see this with, for example, Elliot Page, who uses he, they, and people have defaulted to he because most people are more comfortable with the idea of binary transitions specifically. And so I will use both she and they for Hikaru Utada, but my way of kind of balancing that out is I do end up using they more. And of course, I am really happy to have their pronouns up on their Instagram because I would, in many cases, if it wasn't clear what pronouns someone wanted to use, default to they as a way of respectfully referring to someone where I wasn't certain how they wanted to be gendered, because they is something that can still be seen as gender neutral. But that can be complex. If someone has stated their correct pronouns, then using they intentionally for them instead of using their correct pronouns would be the same as misgendering them. So I wanted to touch on that and touch on, why it might be appropriate to use they sometimes for someone whose pronouns you don't know, but also just that pronouns, sexuality, gender, all these things are things that if I'm talking about someone who is a part of the community, if they have come out in a non-specified way, which some people do, and that's totally their right, people don't have to choose and commit to one particular identity or way of referring to themselves, or they don't owe us their specific identity. But if they haven't come out with something specifically, then I won't refer to them on the show in that way. And that's just to make sure that I am being respectful and not personally assigning them an identity that they haven't chosen, because that's not my right. So I want to play you first, One Last Kiss by Hikaru Utada.
Oh, ていた風の跡を追いかけた眩しい心
So that was Hikaru Utada, and this is someone who you might know from their work on albums like Kingdom Hearts. Sorry. So that was One Last Kiss, but the opening for Kingdom Hearts is one that I see come up as a song that people really enjoyed by them, and so that's something I'm going to play in a few minutes here as well, because of the fact that it's associated with the video game. I think that that's allowed it to reach a different kind of audience that I really resonate with as well. And I think that also songs that are really evocative and well-loved in video games are a huge accomplishment because video game intros and music can sometimes sort of fall in the background. So the fact that I see some enthusiasm for that song made me really interested in particular in listening to it. So there is a couple of really good articles online about Hikaru Utada and their gender and kind of the ways that they're exploring that. But I wanted to highlight in particular one of the things that comes up that I thought was really cool, which is that they talked about the joy of being non-binary. And so that was really neat to see because often we get really negative pictures of coming out or navigating gender. And sometimes we get ideas that it's always going to be difficult or that it's always going to be something where you might be dealing with dysphoria or navigating the problems of trying to make people use your correct name and pronouns. And I'd like to remind you, too, that people rarely oppose, say, something like a name change if it comes in what they see as a socially accepted move. So something like moving to Mrs. as a term for a married woman, or moving to use someone's married name, quote unquote, which is to say usually a woman changing their name to the name of the male person that they've recently married. Now, I say usually because obviously also men can change their names when they marry. Both members of a couple might change their name when they marry, or women might marry women, or women might marry non-binary folks. There's lots of reasons to change your name. But the most common and socially accepted within North America is a heterosexual marriage where a woman marries a man and changes her name. And so she would start using Mrs. and start using the man's last name and sort of, quote unquote, give up her own name. So there's a lot to unpack around that, and it's a very complex issue. And I think that no one should feel like they have to change their name in that respect. But of course, nobody's decision but yours if you do decide to or decide not to. But that's an example of something where there's a very common expectation, so much so that people often ask intrusive questions if you don't choose to do that. So there's a common expectation that you will change your name in that sense. And people don't object to you correcting them to your new name usually. I certainly would say that I've never seen that, and as heterosexual marriages are pretty common, there's certainly lots of people in my life or who I know of or who I've met briefly who have gone through that transition. And I would say it's accepted enough that people kind of find it cutesy or like, oh yeah, sorry, I forgot you're Mrs. X now, if someone corrects them. So it's kind of like a fun moment. And it's not something that people necessarily oppose or act angry about or things like that. If anything, you're usually subject to congratulations. And so what I want to highlight out of that is that if you are changing your name or your pronouns, which is just another form of how people address you, people don't usually object to a correction unless it goes against the grain of social mores and expectations. So this means that people don't have a problem with a minor social behavior, like changing how they address someone, unless it's inconsistent with their view of the world. So they believe that, let's say, women should change their name when they get married to men, And so they'll correct themselves to address this person by their new form of address, but they don't believe that you should just be allowed to change your name or in any other sense change. And so they won't, or they'll feel resentful if they're asked to correct that. Now, you might have already picked up on the fact that this is utterly ludicrous because other people's ideas of what's socially acceptable should not dictate our lives. They do, in many respects, because there are real social consequences to other people's beliefs about what should happen. And there's also institutional and political consequences that arise from or feed into social ideas of how we should behave. But I wanted to highlight that because it shows that it is not hard to change how we talk about people, basically just that we have to want to do it. And I want people to keep that in mind if someone in your life is asking you to change how you address them or telling you that there is a change in how you should address them, which is how I prefer to think of it, because ask sort of implies that it's an option or that you're doing something nice, whereas really you're just moving to the correct form of address. And I would like people who are asking that of other people to be able to remember and comfort themselves by saying, I'm not asking any more than people would be expected to do if they did this socially accepted transition. Okay, so it's not necessarily different just because one is a marriage and one is a transition into living more openly as who you are, whatever it happens to be. And yet, we often act like it's a huge difficulty to address someone in the correct way, to reflect their correct name or pronouns. That is, in my opinion, baby behavior, because it's not. And if you aggressively and maliciously called someone by, say, their unmarried name, and insisted on doing that and insisted on not acknowledging their marriage, and that person went to, say, HR about it, most people, I think, within North America, in my opinion, would be 100% behind the decision to try to seek help in addressing that person's behavior, because they would recognize that person's behavior is wrong and that you deserve to be addressed by the way that you've made clear you want to be. And again, this isn't to say that everybody changes their form of address or wants that when they're married, but if that is how you've chosen to be addressed, say in your workplace, and someone was insistently rudely not doing it on purpose, then you would be entitled to take some action about it. And this is already a soft example, because if you didn't, if you just felt annoyed by it, well, really, that person is not denying your personhood in a way that is present if you are misgendering maliciously someone who is part of the minoritized gender community. So what I mean by that is that while you might feel that your marriage or your choice to go by a married name is a big part of your life, and yes, it can be, and yes, it totally should be respected if you are, even that, if someone refuses to, it might be frustrating, but it won't be the same impact in some ways, again, in my opinion, because if they're refusing to use that one, they are likely to be the only person or one of the only people maybe who is going to kick up such a fuss about it. Whereas if you are someone who's transitioning into using a new name or pronouns, you're likely to encounter multiple people who kick up a fuss about it. And two, because this is a shift that's generally accepted in the world, and you know most people would agree with that shift, and you know that you would be accepted in most places for that choice of marriage or changing your name, it's not part of a social structure denying you that identity per se. And finally as well, I would say that pronouns or say a name that is very, very feminine or very masculine that has horrible connotations for you, being forced to be addressed by that, in my opinion, is more personal than someone refusing to acknowledge your marriage. And there might be specific circumstances in which that is important to those people. And again, so that can be important, but generally speaking, I would say, in my opinion, that personal pronouns and a name change that's reflective of something that is a deep internal identity like gender is much more significant in terms of people denying, refuting it than someone not wanting to use a married term for you. Because it wouldn't be specifically harmful. It's not reminding you of, say, an identity that's likely like painful or discriminatory. it's not outing you in some way, you know, you're not outed as a person who was previously not married because people have been married and then unmarried and so on. So I hope that's a helpful example for thinking about one, that you are entitled to respect around your name change and your pronoun change, and two, that it's really not that much work and that we do it all the time for things that are, in my opinion, less significant to your core identity. So it is something where if people make a big fuss about it, I would say that that re is reflective of their character. And I think that it reflects poorly on who they are as a person and their ability to navigate the world in a way that shows some understanding of it and the fact that sometimes things will change or happen that they don't like. That's something they have to deal with. So represents, in my opinion, someone who's kind of a baby about things and maybe likes things to all be about them or doesn't respond well to change or can't handle the fact that the world is not exactly the way that they think it should be. And maybe I find that so pitiful in part because I see people who are members of minoritized genders and sexualities navigate the world every day having to confront that sort of perspective every minute of their lives. So it is not something where we are confronting that, you know, there are cisgender folks or there are heterosexual folks, and we don't think that there should be those because very few people that I know of think that there shouldn't be cisgender or heterosexual folks. So already we're going about our lives and navigating the world in a way where we're not objecting to their identity existing. So we're not mad about that, about someone else being allowed to be in the world in a way that we don't like, the way that cisgender and hetero folks often are about our groups. But minoritized genders and sexualities, what I mean in this context, are navigating a world every day that is pushing back at them in a way that says you're not allowed to be the way you are. Other people's opinions should dictate your life and how you live and how you feel and what you do. And so they are having to push back against that every day. And so I don't have a lot of sympathy, or I do find it rather pitiful when cisgender heterosexual folks are upset, not because of that experience, because that is not what they have. They don't have to deal with all of that complexity and challenge and difficulty every day. They have to deal with the very minor difficulty that the world outside of them does not conform to exactly the way that they think it should be. So nobody's trying to impose something different on them. They are allowed to have their identity. They live in a society that venerates their identity and legitimizes it in social and political ways. But they're just real upset that somebody else gets to live their life in a way that they don't think should be. And so I think that that's sad. And I don't have sympathy for it because I see a lot of whining about being asked to make minor changes that recognize that people in the world are different from you. And that is very similar to the whining that we see from people who are asked to understand that different cultures have, say, different forms of address or boundaries or physical activities or foods or things like that. You see the same kind of baby fits being thrown by people who don't want to accept the world being different from them in those type of ways as well. So these are people who have always been coddled and comforted by their social and political landscape that has said, oh, don't worry, you're the best option, you're the only option, you're doing well. And when they're forced to confront the fact that maybe they're just one of many options, maybe they're not inherently better than other people for just being who they are, they get upset about it. And so one way that white people can help reflect on this is to look at the history of whiteness and how we tend to manifest ourselves in the world and be upset by other people being different or try to say, well, that's not the right way to do things then, instead of acknowledging reality. And so instead of bringing our view of the world and trying to force it onto other cultures, which is what white people and whiteness has done in the world for years, we could accept reality and observe the fact that, oh, there's other ways of doing things. And that is a perspective that we need to bring to gender and sexuality as well, which is there's other ways of doing things. And we don't necessarily have to understand them perfectly to respect the fact that they exist. And I think that that's another important option around, well, option is probably not the best word, but that's another important thing to consider around minoritized genders and sexualities, around people who are different in a variety of ways, is that a lot of people feel intimidated by this idea that, oh, well, I don't know exactly how to navigate this, so I have to push back. I have to not acknowledge that this is a thing at all, or I have to deny its legitimacy. If I don't, let's say, fully understand it and feel that I can be 100% right on it. So it's almost like this fear of being wrong or being caught out at not doing something perfectly is worse than kind of crawling into your shell and denying that there's that these new things exist or that these things that you're unfamiliar with exist, because they're not always new. So I think that that's a greater challenge in the world and something that has to do with the way that we center this idea that you have to be right all the time on everything to be accepted as an authority in general, or that it's somehow weak or incorrect to admit that you're wrong or adjust your views based on new information. So I want to say that in regards to gender and sexuality, don't worry, minoritized gender folks know that you don't completely understand it. And we're very accustomed to encountering that. It's not a new thing for anybody in this situation. And also, it takes very little to respect people. So remember, the easy part of this is what we are pushing for as a practice is if you don't know, ask. So then there you go. You got the right answer. And if someone says, oh, how do you know how to address someone? You don't have to say, well, here's the formula I figured out when we look at these signals. You can say, you ask them. You have an easy answer for yourself and for other people, an easy way to ensure that you are navigating the world with rightness, quote unquote, if that is something that you are concerned about doing. And it's simply not that difficult. And believe me, it is a much better and more adult behavior than trying to pretend that other things don't exist simply because you do not understand them. So there is a variety of people in the world. There's a variety of genders. There's a variety of languages. There's a variety of pronouns, forms of personal address. And so we're all mixed up in that system. Minoritized gender people are not doing anything particularly new. And again, I would remind you that if you don't know someone's gender, if you don't know the pronouns that they use, that there is, again, easy systems in place to navigate that and to say they or to use their name. Like, there's options. So you don't have to get all red in the face and huffy and upset because you don't know what to do. And I often see this, I would say, in my opinion, or my personal experience, let's say, I would say my personal experience, I see this attitude and this fear from men. Men are very, very, very afraid of getting it wrong. Men are very afraid of being caught getting something wrong. Men are very embarrassed and blustery and emotional, primarily with anger, when they get something wrong. So that's how they deal with embarrassment rather than just being, you know, open about being like, oh, I got it wrong. Here, let's correct that. Or, you know, oh, tell me how to do it right. And I think that some of that, too, has to do with men do not like being corrected on things. And I could put a caveat on that. They don't like being corrected on things in particular by other people who are not men. And so I've encountered that as someone who is non-binary, but navigated the world as a woman and is still viewed as a woman in many contexts. I would say anyone who is viewed as a woman or a femme has likely encountered this, that men do not like it when they are corrected and it will make them angry sometimes. And if men are going to navigate the world in a way that is as respectful towards other people as they expect towards themselves, they need to get over that. So I do want to talk more about Hikaru Utada. I did get on a little bit of a tangent there. I got a lot of feelings about this, and I would say my feelings are in general, get wrecked about being all up in your feelings, get over it. There's, you know, pronouns and people in the world, and it's not all about you. So just learn how to ask. Or don't use pronouns to refer to someone if you are worried about getting it wrong, but it's not hard. So I will play you another song here by Utada Hikaru. This is an English language version of the song. So their name is written Utada Hikaru instead of Hikaru Utada, as it is in most Japanese contexts. So this is Simple and Clean, and I hope you enjoy it. This is the one that is the opening song to Kingdom Hearts.
Walk away, you don't hear me say, please. Oh.
So that was Hikaru Utada with Simple and Clean, and that's something that you might recognize if you played video games, but also it's just a really powerful song, and it's really cool that she recorded it in English for this as well. And so until her most recent album, there wasn't songs that really mix English and Japanese, but if you're one of those people who's bringing up the Englishness of her singing voice in this sense, which is to say that I would say there's not really like a noticeable accent or anything. It seems like that's a question people ask a lot. Hikaru Utada was born in New York, so there's not a lot of ambiguity in why English is something that is not hard. So, and I'm just going to refer to them as Utada now because that is also how they're known, kind of, Madonna-esque. And I think Utada is someone who is certainly well known enough that that is warranted. And so there is an enormous amount of music available, including back to the debut album First Love that she released at the age of 15. So they've really been someone who has contributed tons to pop music over the years. And that is really exciting to see. And it's really exciting to see someone with that kind of presence and visibility openly talk about themselves in terms of being part of the non-binary community. And so this is something that I think is exciting because, as I mentioned before I got onto talking about reasons why it shouldn't be that hard to respect how someone changes their name or pronouns, Utada has talked about the joy of being non-binary, and said that discovering the word non-binary was a gift. And that is something that I find enormously valuable, in part because we often talk about minoritized genders in terms of the negatives that they experience. And there are incredible positives. There's incredible gender euphoria. And so, in this Pink News article, which I will link in the show notes, they talked about the joy they found in terms of coming across this word and just being like, wow, like this is not something I've ever encountered. So, she said, talking about the term non-binary, to quote from the article here, it wasn't a question of am I or am I not? It was like, whoa, where was this word my whole life? So, end quote there. That's a really positive way of highlighting the fact that there are more people generationally and at different ages now that are coming out as non-binary or other identities because of the fact, not because this is a new identity to them or even a new process. So some people do go through the process of shifting in their sense of themselves and their gender at a later age. But a lot of the reason why we see more people is that the more the language is out there and the more people are talking about the different ways that you can be in the world, people who have felt that way for a long time are recognizing themselves in that community. So people like Utada are looking at words like non-binary and being like, that's me. So another quote here that I find really valuable, she said, quote, it was such a validating moment, I didn't even realize how much I needed the term, end quote. So this is someone who has been singing since the release of their first album in 1999. So this is an amazing, prolific performer and someone who is really in the public eye. And so hearing them talk about their identity as a gift is super valuable to me and so amazing. And so Tada also talks about feeling that gender and sexuality are misunderstood in Japan, are not often discussed. And that does seem to be the case from people who I've seen talk about this. So the fact that gender and sexuality are becoming more discussed in North America in particular is often where we see those conversations centered. And sometimes we will talk about countries where, for example, identities such as mine are punished by, death or imprisonment or social ostracism. But there's a lot of variability in how people are treated and simply how people are aware. And so it's exciting to see people talk more about the fact that this doesn't have to be We don't have to, widen our ideas about gender and sexuality only a tiny bit and, admit only like binary trans folks, or we see this kind of attitude towards opening the way we think about things, but only a little, and then we have to stop and be even more rigid. So it's nice to see people talking about, no, we just need to be like more aware. We need to talk more about the variety of genders and sexualities. And Itada talks about this, the idea of sexualities and gender identities being misunderstood in Japan due to lack of discussion of disability. And so in another quote here from an excerpt from the interview on Yahoo Life, which I'll also post in the show notes, Utada said, quote, "There were people writing to me saying they're scared, not necessarily about being trans or non-binary, but just about identity in general. They're scared to be who they are, or they don't know who they are anymore because they've lived their whole lives trying to be liked by other people. People are scared of losing the support and love of their families or losing their jobs and things like that," end quote. So I think it's important to highlight there and talk about how this doesn't have to be about genders and sexualities. So it doesn't have to be about, understanding the world in only slightly less rigid terms. It can be about understanding that there is flexibility and nuance in the world and generalizing that conversation to other communities. So what I took from that quote as well is the fact that when we talk about not being the person who people want us to be, it doesn't necessarily end at gender and sexuality. And there are a lot of countries where people have talked about cultural expectations, or even within countries, some different cultural expectations. So depending on where your parents come from, the circumstance of their upbringing, you might feel pressure to do well in a certain way, often a financial way. And people in Japan, writers and journalists and activists have talked about some sort of rigid social expectations, or certainly maintaining face or maintaining the way that you are viewed in the world being really important in a lot of contexts, or in particular jobs or particular communities or to particular people. So I think that this is something that goes far beyond just gender identity, which hopefully the world is going to come to view in a slightly more evidence-based way. So rather than imposing the idea that there's a rigid two-option thing for this and that we can decide for other people what it is, to start looking at people and saying, no, there's a variety and there's a lot of ways they want to be treated. So while I hope that we're going to come and view gender that way, I think that it's another conversation that's wonderful to recognize that opening up more about not having to be exactly the way that people think gender should be in the world can also help you understand that you don't have to be the way that people think a job or a life has to be in the world. So we see this in a lot of steps. So when we look at first and second wave feminism, and again, I'm going to talk mainly about in North America because that's where my experience in history and learning have been. But when we talk about changes in terms of no longer denying the vote to people who are assigned female at birth, that opened up a lot in terms of my life can be different, because along with that came, social changes on women being in workplaces or having careers or having control over whether or not they birth babies, and not just women, but all people with uteruses. So there was an explosion of understanding that there wasn't one way that we all had to be, and an explosion of understanding with things like the Feminine Mystique and other writings, problematic as they may be, that people were struggling hard with that expectation. There were some people for whom it fit perfectly, and I've talked on previous shows about how often those people don't like the acceptance of nuance and change because they have been fulfilling perfectly this very rigid expectation in the world, and that makes them feel really successful when really they're not losing anything by there being other options. They're just not being the only person doing it right. And so when we see this understanding of we don't have to disenfranchise women, we don't have to say that they can only be wives and mothers, we don't have to wear them out with multiple pregnancies, there's options beyond that, there's sexual pleasure, there's careers, there's all of these things that you are allowed to have as a person and that you shouldn't continue to be denied just because you have been assigned female at birth, then we also see exploration of identity in other ways. And I think that that's one of the things that has helped prompt exploration. And it's one of the reasons, in my opinion, why two LGBTQIA communities, so minoritized genders and sexualities, are often at the center of other conversations around ways to be things like polyamory or kink or anti-capitalism, because the fact is that once you start questioning, do I have to just accept this social rule that's been handed down by previous generations who just decided they thought this is the world should, how the world should be? Once I stopped accepting that as gospel truth and recognize there's multiple ways to be and that I get a say in what happens in my life and the life I want to live, then you start to recognize those possibilities in other ways as well. So that's something that I think is really exciting and that I hope that we're going to see more in terms of conversations that we have around gender and conversations that we have around identity and conversations that we have around things like career and workers' rights and capitalism and productivity. There are so many ways that we can call into question simply blindly following rules made up by previous generations. And also this entrenched belief that many of us have, most of us I think are disillusioned as we come into adulthood, but this belief that sort of someone was in charge and decided it and they were right, or that they took the adequate time to think about it, or that they had good reasons. Once you start understanding that the world is simply not that intentional and it's all a big mess, and that people who, you know, made up rules often didn't listen to the evidence or didn't use evidence-based practice or weren't informed by other groups, that there was tons of people who, you know, questioned things and weren't heard in the final rules that were passed down, or people ignored other views. There's simply nothing is as simplistic as the existing systems would like us to believe, because it's in their interest to suggest to us that this is the only way, and that this way is somehow validated and legitimized by the fact that it already exists, as opposed to the fact that there are multiple possibilities that we could enjoy out in the world and that we are simply not allowing because they would threaten the status quo, or because they wouldn't be something that favored the people who are currently in charge. So there's such a variety of reasons why people don't want to explore multiplicities. And one other very valid reason is that it is scary. So it is scary to think about the fact that there is more going on in the world than there is in your immediate sphere, or that there is more going on in the world than you might easily understand. So it is hard. It is hard to think about how vastly complex things are. And I think that that is one of the reasons why people will fixate on a specific area and say, no, you cannot tell me that things are more complicated than this simple ideal, because it is too scary for me. And again, you might have an easier time saying that or be more invested in it if it's something that works for you. So if you are a cisgender person, someone whose gender identity is consistent with the way they were assigned at birth, someone who fits within the existing structure that we've created and is validated by it, then you might be more invested in it. But there's also people for whom, you know, they are minoritized genders, but they resisted the idea of gender multiplicity or complexity for a while, because even when you don't fit within the system, sometimes it's comforting to think that there is a simple, hard and fast rule and that that is the way it is. It's comfortable to think you've got a handle on things. And it's scary to think that things are out of control, or that there's just so much going on and that you don't get to have that to rely on, have that consistency, even if that consistency is bad. There are people who did resist options in other ways, in other groups, because of the fact that there's just comfort in quote unquote knowing things. There's comfort in feeling certainty, even if there is a disconnect in like the certainty being you're supposed to be one way and it's not good. So for example, women as a group comprising a rough 50% of the world, so largely half the majoritized population, at least the majoritized gender, being mistreated. There are people who upheld that system who were on the side of being mistreated, but because that system gave them safety and security in the sense of there is a rule for how things are supposed to go, and I know it and can understand it even if I don't like it. And so it's scary. It's scary to kind of jump off that and recognize the complexity of the world and navigate a more frightening reality than the one you've built around yourself. So I think that I'll end there for today. I do have some other resources and options around gender and pronouns, and so I'm on a kind of kick with it, but I'll try not to repeat myself, but I am enjoying this topic and enjoying having more of a deep dive into things here. And so I will play you off the show with one more song, and I'm excited to introduce you to more Hikaru Utada, and I hope that you will explore more of the existing music that Utada has been doing. And there's so much there. It's wonderful in my mind to encounter an artist and be able to look back across their music and find lots. So I'm always a little bit frustrated when I find an artist who's new, because I'm like excited to see where they go and how they develop, but I'm like, I want more of your music. And so for Hikaru Utada, remember, Utada has been singing since they were 15, so she's got an established musical career, and there's lots for you to find there if you enjoy her music. So I'm going to play you off with Face My Fears by Utada.
に